Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to episode 79 of The Nero Show. In today's episode...
Testosterone replacement therapy for the everyday cyclist. Shortcut to FTP gains or just good for your health?
$7.5 million wasn't enough to save the NCL. What's really going on?
The road bikes we've seen people riding that they really shouldn't be owning.
And why does it seem kit brands are marketing to non-cyclists? All right, let's get into it. I reckon we're on this week, Jesse.
We're on?
I reckon we're on. It's one of those weeks where... I don't think there's not a bucket of show notes and just like general current events, mm-hmm. but I'm keen for this.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of chat.
Yeah. Where are we starting? Are we going to start off with,
I'm going to start off with your mate.
Cycling Barber.
do you want to fill the audience in the journey that is.
You sent this to me out of the blue. What do you reckon? So maybe we should play it through.
Yeah.
Because he cuts to the chase.
He does.
He doesn't mess around here.
Day 31 of trying to raise my FTP to 5 watts per kilogram. So I finally got all of my blood work back from the labs. Everything is perfectly healthy except my testosterone levels are incredibly low. So to be completely transparent, I'll be starting TRT in the next couple of weeks and documenting everything along the way. So this 5 watt per kilogram is slightly going to be boosted. Let's see if they'll throw some EPO in there too. Just kidding. All zone 2 for today's ride, and I also got an ice bath from Sonnabox, so I'll be doing some of those in the morning to wake my late ass up and begin riding nice and early.
So
let the boys the boys dope. Jesus, Coyle, you're on him already. All right, let's go.
Well, the comments kicked off.
Okay.
As in a classic Instagram reel form, there's a lot of stuff going on in these comments. So situation here, I'd say, especially in the masters category in road cycling, fairly common. Guy goes to either a doctor or maybe an anti-aging doctor, gets a blood test. Testosterone's low. Oh, you'd probably benefit from some testosterone replacement therapy. Do you take it or you do not take it?
I want to push back straight away on this because this, just to lump masters cyclists in with this guy, is unfair on master cyclists. Okay. I don't regard this guy as a cyclist.
Right.
And maybe this is a chat we...
Well, his name's the Cycling Barber.
Whatever. But he's an Atia. He's a Huberman. This is a life biohacker who has crept into our scene. Good luck to him. That's all fantastic. But this guy has... It comes down to, like, his goal in cycling is not a racing goal. It's a I'm going to raise my FTP. It's a generic life goal rather than cycling goal. So that's where I'm coming at with this, and whether he should or shouldn't be doing this, I don't particularly give a shit, but I would push back initially just on categorizing this guy as a master's cyclist.
I'll agree with you there, actually. So is this doping? Now, this is because the top-hearted comment on this reel was, this is just doping. Blah, blah, blah. I know plenty of endurance athletes who ended up with low testosterone and didn't just start taking tests. They had to rest, blah, blah, blah. So he's basically accusing him of doping. Now, his opinion is he's not doping because he's not breaking any rules because he's not racing. And I'd have to agree there. If he doesn't have a, you know, he's in the US. So if he doesn't have a USAC racing license and if he's not entering Grand Fondos that have an anti-doping clause, all he's doing is racing on Zwift, training, maybe a group ride, then he's not really doping. because doping implies a breaking of a rule. So I don't really agree with the people piling on here being like, oh, you're doping. I don't necessarily agree there. But there's an absolute murder of any logic in the comments here. So there's one question here, one comment here. Here says, testosterone reference range is 300 to 1,000. So if you're below 1,000, you're not doping, because this person has friends who are naturally at 700 to 800. That is, what are you talking about?
The old get me up to 50 hemocrit.
Yeah. That's okay. Literally the same logic as me being like, well, I'm taking EPO, but I'm only going to take it to get my hemoglobin to 170. And I know a mate who naturally has 170 hemoglobin, so I'm not doping. That is.
But let's look at that comment and the wording of it, right? I know plenty of endurance athletes, right? So to me already, I'm flagging that person as probably a gym person, because they regard anyone who's doing exercise over an hour as an endurance athlete. They probably don't know it as a cyclist. So in their world, yeah, that's the way they think. It's like, well, you've got a little bit more natural talent, whatever, in that regard. They're not thinking in the cycling space. They don't have the checkered history we all know of this sport. And so that commenter, and this is the problem a lot of the time when you're talking about these sort of stuff, especially on Instagram Reels, like this has clearly gone way out of the cycling audience and it's gone into the gym junkie audience. And that's the way these people think.
Yeah, but just on the levels, right? So he's 300 to 1,000. And he said, well, my levels are currently 232. So it's not really cheating if I just take a bit of testosterone. I think it's a bit of a stretch to think that attitude isn't actually in road cycling. I mean, that's what we think based on the people we hang out with. But, I mean, if that's the attitude of the people in these comments, I mean, who's to say that's not kicking around the Masters scene? I mean, sure it would. Oh, I'm just on doctors said I'm a bit low, I'm only taking 100 milligrams a week, 150. You know, it's not doping because I'm just getting into the healthy range.
Yeah.
Which is just, I mean, it is doping because it's against the rules, but just even in an ethical sense, it's still doping because that's not how, that's you're shortcutting your way there. Now, that's a point going to what you said there. Like, what Wild West medical system is it in the US where, now that's what he hasn't said. He said, I did a blood test with my doctor. He said my testosterone was low. If by doctor he means maybe he went to like a testosterone clinic and it was an anti-aging doctor, in which case it would make sense. I know from speaking to some people here in Australia, it works differently. Generally, a GP, which is your general, your family doctor, your physician, at least in Australia, doesn't appear to be as liberal with their prescribing of TRT. Maybe it's different over in the US, and he has just seen his local doctor, done one blood test with the testosterone. Oh, it's low. Here you go. Here's a script. Okay, that'll solve your testosterone problem, but what's caused this guy's testosterone to be low? And that's the question I have for this kind of TRT crowd, is like, something's caused your testosterone to be low. Like, has it been low through your adolescence into being an adult and you have some genetic issue with your pituitary gland that you have always had low testosterone? Or have you just not been treating yourself that well and your testosterone's low? In which case, yeah, taking testosterone will help fix that gap, but there's that whole other spectrum of things, well, specifically related to this cycling barber's performance, that testosterone will mask, but it's not going to fix. Yeah, if he's sleeping Great 5 point. Hours a night, what good's, yeah. You fix. It's just a Band-Aid.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Just in regards to the competitive road cycling scene around the rules around it, just because your doctor prescribes it doesn't mean you can take it. So at least I think it's wider actually. For you to get a TUE for testosterone, you have to have a proven genetic disorder that causes low testosterone. You can't just have functionally low testosterone because you overtrained for a month and then you got a blood test And then your doctor said, well, you have a medical issue, so here's a TUE. You can legally take testosterone. So even within what the rules are under WADA, the process for getting a TUE for testosterone replacement therapy is quite strict. It's a series of blood tests. Last time I checked, it was over a series of months. And also with a test for what the actually underlying cause of your low testosterone is. It can't just be, oh, well, I drink too much. My testosterone's low, so I'm allowed to just take testosterone. So just keeping that in mind as well, even trying to go down the get a TUE for it, it's not just, well, my doctor said I can take it, so I'm allowed.
Yeah, I was obviously, I'm trying to push back on you to create a conversation here, but ultimately, I don't know, a lot of this to me, how do I say this? Right. We kind of think of cycling as this really inclusive sport that everyone can get into.
Mm.
That's true. But not everyone can ride at 5 watts per kilo. There's a reason that's quite a high athletic achievement. And for someone who, in this particular circumstance, he's got a physical job. I don't think he's that old, but anyway.
He looks probably 27.
That's actually why this triggered me in the first place, because I saw this and I was like, this guy looks like he's 17 and he's on TRT. But anyway, put that aside. So he's got this physical job, blah, blah, blah. He probably has a lot of responsibilities outside cycling, and these things probably do in many ways affect his testosterone, which would therefore affect his ability to get a high FTP. Therefore, it's probably not a goal you can achieve. Like, just that's it. Face the reality. Unfortunately, cycling is a sport like that. It's fucking brutal. It's hard. There are people who are far more talented than you are who will have higher FTPs. I know this is like just going around in circles kind of chap, but I just hate this easy out attitude, which I do think, and I've said this a little bit before, I do think does come a lot from the biohacking crowd.
Yeah.
We're going to start cold plunging. We're going to start staring at the sun in the morning, and all of a sudden I'm going to wake up in a 2 months' time and it will be like, oh, suddenly my life is perfect. The sad reality of cycling is it's so frigging consistency-based. It's just hours and years of just grinding to get anywhere, that the biohacking crowd, that doesn't compute with them. So this is like, oh, my testosterone's low. Well, I know how to fix that. I'll get some more testosterone.
And why 5 watts per kilo?
Yeah.
That's really fit. I mean, what? Why not just say 4? And if your testosterone's low, try and be healthier to restore it naturally. It's such a weird mentality. I mean, I think the age thing makes a difference for me. If this was a video and he was 60.
Agreed.
And you're going, well, you've got a natural decline in testosterone by that age and you're still really burning the candle at both ends with your goals and you're not competing in anything competitive that has an anti-doping clause, go for gold. But as a seemingly 25-year-old, it's so irresponsible of the doctor to just write the script. I mean, when I saw this, I was kind of shocked because I'm thinking, well, how many actual cyclists that would just be doing this?
Mm.
Even, and just being like, well, my doctor said I need it or I'd be better taking it. So I'm just going to take it, but then they'll just, but still go and race or.
Yeah, well, obviously the going racing thing, but okay, maybe to
like what
it, does it? I mean, the side effects of taking TRT are, from what I gather, relatively minimal.
At the doses, at a TRT dose, yeah.
So
except it kills your sperm count. So I hope he doesn't want to have kids anytime soon.
So is he? Are we just carrying on because we're racers and this is a big no-no for us, but for someone just looking for, I don't know. I find it hard to defend, but you know what I mean?
Like,
Is it just to let the boys play, you know? Just no side effects? You know, maybe he doesn't drink. Maybe he's living this sort of, you know, pure lifestyle. And
look, maybe he is. Maybe there's no health stone left unturned and he's sleeping 9 hours a night and everything's dialed in and for just some reason his testosterone's low. I just think that would be few and far between of the people that are taking TRT. I know because I've spoken to people. It's just, oh, my testosterone's low and I do 20 other things not adequately. But it'd be nice. I'll just take the testosterone. Like, why would I want to go and fix all that stuff? Anyway, carrying on in this sort of health scene, let's keep it moving because this is an interesting sort of comparison here. GCN did a really good video with Dan Lloyd and it's blown up. So it went up 3 days ago. It's already on 300,000 views. By the time this goes up, it'll be above 300,000. It's Dan's journey back to health and fitness. Couple of reasons why I liked it. Firstly, it didn't pander. It was just him standing there without a top on in the thumbnail, and it's just my journey back to fitness. So in the video, he does go through and explain what happened, where he's at now, the fact that he was smoking for quite a long time, drinking too much. Dan was quite high up in GCN, so he was going through the launch of GCN Plus and the GCN app, the purchase of that, the then making that, the disbanding of that. So he's work-wise, I can only assume, has been going through a lot of shit. So he's had that sort of stress and now he's gotten to the point where he wants to get things back on track. And I just think, first off, this was just a really, what would be a quite inspiring video in terms of the health scene.
What did they do really? Because I totally agree with you. But I've seen a few of these from sort of cycling YouTube-y people, not even just cycling YouTube people, but I watched them and I immediately was like, oh, you're trying to get the soft audience to buy into your sad sob story, which we've seen. I think we've called it out a few times in the past when we've seen it. Like, oh, I've stopped drinking now, feel sorry for me, this kind of thing.
Mm.
But what did they do right here? Because this did, it hit all the marks. It didn't seem to sort of preach anything. It gave a really good insight, I think, into maybe it's just the character of Dan is a kind of engaging, interesting character. I'm not sure. But what for you maybe?
Well, I just thought it was genuine.
Okay.
It wasn't, oh, I drank too much and I really struggle with alcohol. Everyone feels sorry for me and I'm on this journey,
Yeah, both like of us.
You chose
off
to drink,
immediately.
Like you. Yeah. This was just, this is where I'm at. He spent maybe a minute talking about the things he'd done wrong. It wasn't some sob story, and then it was just, well, run the battery of tests he did, and then setting himself up for us sort of following along. It was just tastefully done. Not trying to pull on people's heartstrings, and which I just, it's just you're making YouTube videos, and it don't make us feel bad because you drink too much.
Yes.
So I appreciated that. Just in light of the TRT thing, here's where I find it interesting. Okay.
Okay, where's this
link? Well, should Dan Lloyd, would it be fair game for Dan Lloyd to take TRT?
Okay,
so he's put on weight. He's put on visceral fat, so he hasn't been eating that well. I can only assume he's been, as I said, really stressed with his work. He's been smoking and drinking. If he got did he get a blood test here in the video? Can't remember. If he did get a blood test and they tested his testosterone, would it be low? I'd say there's a pretty good chance he doesn't have optimal testosterone. So it also wouldn't be a stretch to think that, at least if he was maybe in the US, some doctor says, hey, you should probably go on TRT. You'd be better for it.
Medically, I have absolutely no opinion on it. I mean, I don't know what the – Is there a real medical downside to really low testosterone? I'm probably sure there would be.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, yeah, go for it.
Go for it, Dan.
Basically, Dan, yeah. I mean, if in that circumstance.
It just seems like a similar situation to this other guy.
Yeah. Except, the other guy's doing it for performance reasons. He's trying to get to 5 watts per kilo, whereas I think what came through with Dan, he's trying to make his life better, you know? Maybe he should. Maybe,
Mm-hmm. I think there would be definitely people. Now, I've just totally made a whole bunch of assumptions, but let's just run with them. Assuming maybe his testosterone is low right now, I think there'd be quite a few people in this situation that probably would take TRT. My point is, I'm on board for Dan's journey to see where he can get to by just making the lifestyle changes and seeing what progress that gets him. And I think that's more of an inspirational, aspirational story than, oh, here's my journey, my TRT journey, which you see. You don't see it in cycling. I've seen it, you know, the Mark Lewis has done it and some of the other sort of health, you know, all the every freaking podcast is on TRT. It's like, that's the done thing in that scene. I think it's cool Dan is doing just the real bread and water.
What's the big weight loss drug?
Ozempic.
Ozempic?
Yeah.
Get him on the
Give him the full.
Give him the full.
Well, maybe that's what Chris Miller wants to see. He wants to see, so with this, an alter ego, Dan's journey back to health and fitness, and it's the full.
Yeah, the Dan Lloyd AI bot.
It's the Icarus version.
Yeah.
I think this is just a better way to approach it. And no, then it maybe, look, maybe Dan can't get there because he's in his, still young. I think he's in his 40s.
50s. So.
Is he 50-something, is he? Actually, not sure I already is. I will say just as well on the actual video, they did a whole battery of testing. I will say it's a bit unnecessary. I mean, he's on like dynamometers and isometric machine, like of leg extension, like all this really expensive. Like this machine he's on that's testing is, it has a set load and then it's like reps, the range. But that machine probably costs like $40,000. So a lot of this stuff you could just do if you've got a power meter and you want to do some strength testing too. I mean, you could just, how many push-ups can you do? How many pull-ups can you do? What's your 6-minute power? What's your 20-minute power? It's a bit unnecessary, all the tests he's done. I mean, a lot of people could just do this at home. The body composition test, you can't really do at home. That's the only one where if you want to get your body fat percent and your bone density, you're going to have to get a DEXA. The rest you can kind of DIY.
I do feel like, and I know Dan was a pro cyclist, very good professional cyclist. I feel like he was almost the last generation of pro cyclists that you saw finish up their careers and really blow out. Like, because they had such a really bad relationship with food and diet and nutrition, it was that full, like, starve yourself mentality type thing. And a lot of the professional cyclists that have, once they retired from that realm, just went really destructive the way they, you know, approached their body. I feel like the new generation of guys now that are maybe still in the peloton, sort of coming out of it now, like, you know, I kind of think like when Michael Matthews retires, he's not going to be a blob. Like, he will just be a normal living human, which is a good thing, clearly. Like, it's that, I think we've come out of that phase of the guys leaving the sport totally just destroying themselves. Maybe I could round this into a little thought bubble I've been having. I don't know where I sit on it.
All right.
But are modern cyclists,
right,
riders these days, softer? I'm not talking about pros.
Okay.
Not even talking about like elite races or anything. Just the general cyclist.
Club guy. Yeah.
Softer than they were 10, 15 years ago.
I think you think they're, well, tell me, why do you think they're softer? I think you're hinting at that they're soft nowadays. Try and convince me why. I mean, I actually think the average enthusiast road cyclist now is tougher, is putting more in. Just like this random dude who's like, I want to have a 5 watt per kilo FTP. Like, what? That's such a high level. The bar nowadays is,
I agree,
like double.
Don't disagree with that.
It used to be like, if you could just make it to Waterfall, if you could ride 100K, you were like the good and pull some turns, you were a good rider in a club. Now it's like you've got to be aero tucked in and you've got to be sitting on 35K an hour. And you've got, you know exactly how many watts you're doing and you know what your FTP is, watts per kilo.
But does, yeah, okay, you, I think this is what I struggle with. you're right. Like all the metrics have doubled, tripled what an average cyclist can do. Like I was just in the park the other day riding next to someone. They're telling me that, you know, they're just a very average, normal cyclist. He's riding 400 or 500 Ks a week just because he knows he's following his training plan, blah, blah, blah. I totally, yeah, it's not that. I think it's more the psychology. Like, are they willing, I'm going to get myself in trouble for this, but like, are they willing to hurt themselves as much as they used to? Because, okay, what I feel is that we want to avoid pain. We want to avoid suffering. There's ways to avoid it. It might be PRT. It might be an aero bike. It might be a better interval session. I don't know. Just the pure suffering. This is such an back in my day chat, isn't it? I know you're just laughing.
I wholeheartedly just disagree. Yeah. I'm not on the same.
All right.
I'm thinking, okay, think Barrel Classic.
Mm.
It's way harder than it was, let's say 10 years ago. Like the level is so high.
Mm.
If you're not to the point where now, even just to be mid to sort of 75th percentile, you're really good.
Mm.
Yeah. You're not just like,
yeah.
Okay,
I've disconnected good from soft. So, and I regard myself as kind of maybe a bit soft in that regard as well. Like I would.
Yeah. I do think there are a large group of riders who are soft because they don't even step a foot in that circle.
Mm.
They look at it and they just go, nah, I'm just going to buy a Paz Normal kit. I'm not even, and I just don't. I think that they're being soft because they're what could we call them? The hobbyists that never step beyond being a hobbyist.
The fashion cyclists?
Because the fashion cyclists. They never step beyond that because they see the level of that crowd and it's so high that I think if I was going to call anyone soft, it would be the fashionista crowd that don't get into the fitness cycling because the level is so high. I could see a point there, but for the people that are actually do make that step, they're way harder than they were before because there's no punting it, there's no fluking it. It's
that's a real fair. That's a very fair comment.
But
actually,
that group of fashionistas, who were they? Let's say 15 years ago, like
they might not have even been in the sport. And it's interesting. So I kind of threatened to do this rant about like fashion cyclists are all pandering, softing around the place. And I had a few people reach out about it and kind of just informing me in a polite way, which was quite nice, I thought, but saying that a lot of the people in that crowd have not come, they've got no history of competitive sport, no history at all of competitive sport. So most of us all grew up with playing some kind of sport like cricket, rugby, rowing, soccer, tennis, whatever it was, like Saturday sport was what you did. You competed. A lot of that crowd never ever had that. They were probably doing piano lessons or something on the day, and now they're in the sport. So for them, the jump to actually race, it's not only a physical step, but it's just not something that's ever been something a part of their lives and existence at all. So I've kind of backed off that rant for the moment because I'd never thought of it like that.
Right.
Because, like, cycling is a sport to me. It's not a hobby. It's a sport. Mm-hmm. And a sport is competition. Like, I can't play a round of tennis with you without it ending in we're playing a competitive match. I'm just going to hit the ball to you. Like, we will start keeping score. Mm-hmm. That's how I play sport.
Yeah.
That's not how someone like that thinks about cycling.
Mm.
Yeah, that's all.
And and if they did start to think about it a bit more and they go, everyone's got a 4 watt per kilo threshold. What's like, I'm at 2.
Mm.
What? How? That's such a big leap now that I can kind of see why you might not even bother because you just go, well, that's it's such a big gap.
All right, fair enough. Cyclists aren't soft. I'll accept that for now. A quick break to discuss sports micronutrition brand Pillar Performance. Traditional nutrition products like hydration and carbohydrates will take you through to the finish line, whereas Pillar's mission is to get you to the start line in the best condition, over and over.
In this episode, Pillar wants to bring awareness to the benefits that magnesium supplementation can have for you as a cyclist, particularly as it relates to your sleep and recovery. Do you have trouble getting to sleep each night, or do you suffer from reduced sleep quality, particularly after your biggest training days? If so, magnesium supplementation can help improve all areas of your sleep by regulating melatonin production and reducing cramps that interrupt your sleep quality. Pillar's Triple Magnesium is a 300 milligram blend of absorbable forms of magnesium that tastes great and is Inform Sport batch tested to be free from banned ingredients.
If you would like to try Pillar today, get 15% off by using code Nero at pillarperformance.shop, or for North American viewers, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter code Nero for 15% off. Other big news this week was, can we talk about this, Jesse? Or have you got any other
big news?
Random stuff.
No, I've got nothing.
About?
Yeah, what do we got?
Yeah, I want to talk about the NCL.
Oh, yes.
The National Criterium League and its demise.
Done.
So, I'll just quickly, for those of you who haven't seen this, the National Criterium League was a domestic professional criterium competition that was started last year. It's had a big amount of capital investment from lots of very famous people, $7.5 million of capital investment. And this week it announced that it has, well, I think the official term was paused operations.
Right.
Effective immediately as it looks to restructure and rebuild for the 2025
season. So this
season.
Is what, just because I'm in Australia, I haven't made a heap of attention to it. I didn't realise the NCL isn't just a league that hosts races. So over the time they've been running since 2023, they've hosted three.
One, two, three
races. Three. That's it. Three criteriums. Not tours, three crits. But that's not the only thing they did, because the teams that were a part of the NCL also ran. So part of running the league was also running three teams underneath that. So it wasn't just that they've done three races. They also had, up until, well, basically now that the teams are defunct because the league's been paused, they had also been supporting paying rider salaries, getting equipment and running the teams, who also went and didn't just do the three crits that the NCL run. They also raced just generally as part of the crit scene across the US too. So I didn't never really consider that they were also managing teams. But I mean, that's the money. Can we talk about the money here? So they had $7.5 million of capital investment when it started, and they've run for not even 2 years. Because it was 2023, and then what? How many months are we into 2024? So not even 2 years around, and they've $7.5 million US dollars is wiped off.
Well, has it all disappeared, Jesse, or has something else gone on? And look, unlike you, I have paid. I don't know whether I paid a lot of attention to this, or I just have been forced to pay a lot of attention to it, because I got sent a lot of stuff about this in the last 24, 48 hours from different people, and something here stinks. There's a little stench going on, and I don't know exactly what it is. I'm actually hopeful we'll have someone on in the next couple of weeks so we can talk specifically about all this. But look, there's things like pre-season team camps where we're staying in five-star hotels. We're talking about, I've heard rumors that it, as part of, because to get this at a capital investment, right, you put together a proposal. And yep. So part of the proposals that I've heard is that there was an intention or a proposal to have in year three almost $85 million of earnings coming through this league. And obviously the only way something like that would happen is if there was like some big broadcasting deal or something like that would come into the equation to boost this, well, boost the coffers here.
Okay.
Now, you could maybe argue that the demise of GCN Plus here, because the only experience I ever had of watching any of this was on that GCN Plus. I think it was like the Miami or maybe it was the Denver one, which just suddenly appeared on GCN Plus. But I don't think there was you know, an $80 million broadcast deal in the works just before GCN Plus disappeared. Then there's this whole other thing about these NDAs that all the writers and the management were forced to sign. And this is super weird. When's the last time you signed an NDA?
So
you can't talk about.
You can't discuss about the ins and outs of your.
Correct.
Your. Anything related to the team.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then there's this, look, obviously lots of people are super pissed off, but one of the team managers, Michael Creed, went to Instagram and just absolutely tore one off the NCL VP of teams, Reed McAlvin, who's a big name in the US scene. He was clearly involved pretty heavily in putting this whole thing together. And there's a tone in his post here that kind of says that he's not afraid, so this Michael Creed guy isn't afraid of the repercussions of not being able to continue in the sport by calling a spade here.
I'm just confused why he's so up in arms, because Avolo is just a, I think they're a Conti team or they race internationally. Well, I'm struggling to see why he is all pissed off with NCL, because he doesn't run an NCL team. What's
Yeah.
Well, why is that annoying?
I don't know the specifics of that, but I'm trying to read between the lines of this that it seems like things, well, it's pretty obvious, things have been promised by the NCL that then the teams were then leveraging off their sponsors or whoever, their riders, their staff, and now that's all fallen through. And then once that sort of crumbles down, you're as a team left. And I don't know what kind of things were promised. Are we talking races? Are we talking financial investment? That would be my guess, that in some way that the NCL is financially involved in some of these teams. That would be the way I'm sort of looking at it. And that's probably why NDAs are involved. But again, like, yeah, I mean, this just, it's pretty, I don't really want to go down that route, but there's obviously a bit of crossover with what we were sort of talking about the other week here with something domestically trying to turning that into a commercial viable product is just a very big challenge with big, big risk.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
And downsides. But I suppose my worry, not so much so worry with, because the easy thing, and you've seen it in some of the comments underneath it, it's like, oh, road racing's dead, gravel, blah, 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 right? And it's almost like the first comment under anything when it comes to this sort of stuff. And yes, there's obviously that element to it, but the fact is that gravel's just doing this shit better, because gravel's actually engaging mass participation. It's engaging grassroots people. It's not faffing with all the fake pretend professional stuff that we're being shoved down our throats by the boys club. You know, it's just stripped back and it's working. And yet that framework, which is pretty obviously working, doesn't seem to be something people in road want to be involved about. Now, obviously, it's very hard to, you know, if you're trying to get capital investment from someone, it's pretty hard to say, well, you know what, we need $7.5 million to run a really super stripped back mums and dads league that's going to allow anyone to race because there's less barriers to entry. It's not a very sexy product to sell, but it's certainly a more sustainable product to sell. And I think as gravel has proven, it's the only thing that works.
So is the takeaway from this NCL thing that it should just never have really happened in the first place, that it's actually done more harm than good? Is that sort of the...
That's where my head's
okay,
at. Yeah.
That's what we've got. That's, yeah. Okay, right.
And the we don't need to reinvent the wheel when it comes to this stuff.
The weird thing, there's so much cash here,
mm.
but the NCL races aren't the biggest. I think what's the biggest criteriums in the US that you've got? Tour of America's Dairylands, you've got Tulsa Tough. They're the two staged criteriums. Like those are the ones that have come to mind. Like the Denver NCL, even though it had all this money, I mean, because it was on GCN, I don't know. Yeah, it's just there are already.
But they were going to make it commercially viable, Jesse. That's the whole brilliance of it. And that's what we're going to, yeah, anyway, been there, said that. And that's my thing. Like the Tulsa Tough, these sort of events, they're huge. Like, and even if you, I don't know if you've watched many of Jeff's videos, I've been watching quite a bit of the NorCal footage lately. Like there's a shitload of people turning up and doing racing. Like even that Redlands Classic had a heap of people there racing. So I don't know. I just want to push back on this being the death knell of road cycling because the NCL didn't work. My two cents from afar is this shit was never going to work. Double down on the fact you've got a lot of people who want to actually race their bikes and just make it much easier for them to do it because it's proved. It's proved that people are turning up and wanting to do bike races.
I feel sorry for the riders. They're now out of contract. Well, like they're out of contract for the rest of the year.
Always loses in these situations.
I mean, it's a stitch up for I mean, hopefully they just go and race the races that were already on, you know, the Tulsa Tough and stuff. Can they join other teams or can the teams run independent of the? Probably not. They've probably got some really fucked up non-compete. I don't know. We'll see.
Are you coaching any guys in the US at that sort of level?
I coach one rider who's on a big criterium team in the US. But not part of the NCL.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's on a good gig. He gets some like it's wouldn't say it's a career, but it's just he doesn't have to work. So it's a healthy scene. I mean, if you've got riders getting some sort of some sort of money coming in every month, to keep them afloat while they can kind of race as essentially a professional, and they're not in the NCL. I mean, that's you dream of that in Australia. So that already exists aside from this NCL. So I mean, we're kind of just. The fact that we're talking about it is we're making the problem worse. But it is interesting that this money comes in, pop up, and then it just disappears, and you're back to well the races that were already sustainable and were running. And
we're talking about it because it's a very relevant conversation in this country at the moment.
Mm.
So that's why commercially. Yeah. Anyway, said that. But I'm super interested in the comments down below for this one. So do let us know your experiences on this if you have been involved in it. And like I said, watch your space. We're certainly going to follow it up with some more specific stuff on the show in the coming weeks.
All right, back to basics. I'm done with it. We're all off, you know, all theoretical and ideological. And let's go back to some equipment chat.
Yep.
Let's stick with what we know, right? Because we were riding around Centennial Park the other day. I feel bad saying this, but there was a guy on a bike.
You feel bad saying this? We're basically going to talk about
that we've
this.
Ridden past someone and gone, that's a dog of a bike. I mean, fuck, how rude are we?
We didn't say it to him. No, but they didn't. Rode past him and go, geez, that's a piece of shit, mate.
No, like, it's not a bad bike. It's just in 2024, there are bikes that have... are just redundant.
Yes. No, that, okay. That's
now,
a get.
This bike in particular.
So this is a community service, what we're about to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Community service. Yeah.
So what it was a giant TCR disc, but a 2017 edition. And it really is a bike that shouldn't exist because it was one of the first generations that went disc brake. So it was basically giant TCR chassis. We've just bolted on a disc brake caliper.
Slap them on there.
You've got external cables. There's almost no aerodynamic tweaking to the frame. So you've got what is essentially what was a climbing bike that's now the weight of a mid-range aero bike with external cables, and it's not doing anything. Thankfully, they've tied it up the TCR to the 2024 TCR. Cables are out of the wind, so at least it looks nice. A couple of watts faster, and then they've finally managed to refine the frame enough around the disc brakes that it's a competitive weight.
Mm.
But that, in 2024, the old 2017, 2018 TCR discs, just buy if you wanted, you should just get the rim brake version. Because I look at that, and then compared to my bike,
yes.
And I'm on a 2017 rim brake TCR, and I go, that smokes the disc version.
Looking back now, that first iteration of disc brake bikes did such a disservice. We're still paying the consequences of how bad those bikes were now.
Yeah.
And it's legit because they are dogs of a bike. And I'm sorry, like the comments are going to be, oh, I've got this bike. I really like it. It's crap. I'm sorry. It really is crap. I've experienced two of these bikes. First was the Bianchi XR3, which I've spoken a little bit about
that
on
was
this channel.
Horrible.
It was so bad. So it was their first. It was exactly what you said, Jesse. This was when they were still designing frames for rim brake bikes, but just slapping on through axles. And the word compliance was not in the vocabulary of anyone riding these bikes. It was so harsh, incredibly harsh. And again, like not aero, and this was the point. I mean, there was an XR3 disc and an XR3 rim that were out at the same time, and the XR3 rim was a beautiful, fast, like relatively affordable for a Bianchi bike, and the XR3 disc was like a kilo and a half, 2 kilos heavier, stiff as fuck, and it was, sorry, just like hellish to ride.
They just basically got the frame, the tubes where the disc brakes attached, they just made them thicker.
Mm.
And so it wasn't just, oh, well, it's the rim version, but 300 grams heavier because of the disc brakes. They were like easily a kilo heavier back in the original days because they didn't have any time to refine them.
And the reason we get so uppity about bike reviews is because I went back and read some of the bike reviews. Now, I will call myself out. I did a review of that XR3 disc and I certainly wasn't as harsh as I should have been. But I went back and I read some reviews. Now,
well, you're a sponsored rider.
I was a sponsored rider.
It was a team
bike.
This is true. I mean, you got to, you know.
Yeah, you got to shill. Yeah. To shill out.
You have to shill for the team.
The only one I've experienced, so that was the Cervelo R5, but it was the 2019 edition. So it was two iterations ago, but it was the disc version. And you go look, I think poor old Dave's done a review of this when he was at Rhodes CC, and they all talk about, oh, the ride quality is a little bit harsh, a little bit here and there. That does not go anywhere near as far as describing about how absolutely robust and brutal that bike was. It was just like lighting a fire up your ass, the amount of reverb and reverberation you were getting through there. Just a really, really bad, bad bike. That whole iteration, it's like, what are we, like 2017, 2018, that kind of area is just not a great place to be.
Well, they kind of run on, if we say, for 3-year iterations. So if the 2017 was the first year, then you had a 2020, and now you've got the 2024. So you're basically on a bike that was designed, if you bought it in 2017, you know, that bike was being designed in 2015, 2016. Then you've got a year of production and stocking it. So, yeah.
It was
generations ago
almost.
It
was slower, heavier, and less comfortable. All of them. It was the trifecta. But you've not all.
Well, you've got another one here. I mean, we're really just... We've basically just said every climbing bike that then had disc brakes put
basically.
On it.
Basically, yeah, yeah.
Because you've got here 2018
Imonda SL disc six. Yeah, it was shocker. Shocker. It was like an 8.5 kilo climbing bike.
I think the stiffness on this one was the problem.
Yeah, right.
I coached a few riders that rode this, and they did not feel that. It didn't feel snappy. It wasn't snappy. That was what I've heard of the older models.
I think we've just trashed the secondhand bike market for anything in this particular vintage. But you're dead right. Like, it's just so confronting looking at it when you're like your bike that is like peak rim brake. And at the exact same time, you were trying to be flogged this thing that was just, yeah.
Yeah, in the same year, you can get the peak rim brake bike, or you could get the worst possible version of a disc brake bike. And, like, unfortunately, that person bought the disc brake one. And if you're Ryan around Centennial Park, you don't need disc brakes. So it's, yeah, it was just a shame.
What about the early...
What do they do? What should they have done? Should they just have waited? Give it another, like, sort of put the disc brakes on the current chassis. Don't release it. Wait another 2 years. What, and then release it when it's a respectable weight?
Yeah.
Is that what they should have done?
Pretty much. Wait for the tubeless technology to catch up
as
well. He could have masked quite a few evils with 55 PSI.
When did you move to tubeless? 2020, when we went to Campy Borers, yep. 2020.
But then we were only running 25s.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't the full experience.
Mm-hmm. So in 2018, you were a real front runner if you had tubeless. You were one of those weird tubeless
weird ones. Yeah. What about the aero bike, that early aero bike phase? To me, this isn't something that it's a bad bike. So I'm thinking, you know, that the early iteration of the Propel, even the Venge to a degree.
S5 stands out for me. The Cavendish
first
version.
One. Yeah. We're talking disc brakes though.
Oh, we're talking disc, well, right? Okay. Yeah. Right.
And System 6. To me, all decent enough bikes. But what I keep noticing this. I don't know if you're the same, but I say this. The people riding them, I don't think are the right people who should be riding them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. But that's only now.
Yes.
Because until this latest generation, let's say you're buying a Cannondale, System 6 versus the Super 6. Well, if you're buying it in 2024, the difference at really high speed aerodynamically between the System 6 and the Super 6 is not that much. I'm pretty sure the System 6 was 203 at Tour Magazine's testing, and the new Super 6 is 207. So they kind of, from the latest generation, they sort of bridge that gap. So if you're looking at someone now riding a Cannondale System 6, unless they're some 80-kilo guy with a 400-watt threshold, you'd go, yeah, makes sense. For everyone else, when you're looking at them now in the current generation, you kind of go, you look at most people. I see riding the System 6. I go, well, actually, you'd probably be better on the new Super 6.
Yeah.
But obviously, at the time they bought the System 6, the gap hadn't closed that much. And so it was probably maybe back then, if the old Super 6 was, if Tour Magazine tested, maybe if it was 215 watts aero drag, then you could maybe say, convince yourself you'd want that one. But yeah, obviously you look at that System 6 now and you go, ooh. I live in La La Land sometimes, because I think, when was the last time they actually worked on a rim brake frame set? So the SL6, the Tarmac SL6 rim brake, if we want to call that the pinnacle of a rim brake bike, was released in 2017, which means they probably stopped actually working on it at least in 2016. So it's been 8 years, and probably if that was 2017 release, it would have been a 2020 release. If we were on if they still had ran a rim brake Tarmac, we would have two more update cycles already. And I start to go, imagine what would that bike be now?
That'd be a good pandering
because
video.
Because the Tarmac has gotten, with the disc brakes, has gotten a lot lighter. Like, what's the, how much weight have they stripped off that production bike stock? From the SL6 disc to the SL8, they've probably taken a kilo off it.
Mm. But the problem would come with the actual brakes being that we would want the development, I'd want 25 mil rim internals with my 30 mil tires
mm-hmm.
on my rim brake bike. And I would wonder how would that work with the calipers? And then all of a sudden, I'm not sure how, like, the forces at play come into that when you're trying to fit a caliper around that and get enough stopping power onto a carbon clincher, because it would be a carbon clincher around that sort of thing, and whether you'd actually start going backwards rim brake-wise when it comes to the actual ride quality.
I'd like to think they'd figure it out. You know, Shimano go, okay, everyone wants wider tyres. My regular, so not direct mount, my regular rear brake on my TCR, I've got a 28 mil wide tyre on the rear there that fits in there. So if the group set was keeping up, and it's not a stretch to think that they would have managed to make that wider and wider over the last two generations. And so you could have, what would it be? I mean, would it be a 6.5 kilo fully aero bike that's the speed of the Simplon Pride that weighs 6.5 kilos that can fit 32 mil tyres with a rim brake, but it'd be stiffer than the disc versions because you don't have to reinforce all the areas where the disc brakes are? What a shame. Mm. what we could have. Be very
no, the wheels would be shit. I disagree. The wheels would be shit. The experience. No, I don't think so.
You do have to put the brake track on. I just think
that's going to overly affect the way that the wheels are able to be. You won't be able to get the shape on the wheels that you have now. I just
it does give more freedom
for
the rim.
No way in hell. I've got a 30, I'm at the 25 mil rim internal. I've got a 30 on the front now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even want to talk about it because I'm genuinely that so much Kool-Aid now that I feel like by talking about it, it's giving people knowledge about this sort of performance advantage that I have. That's how good I think these just massively fat things are. And I just can't see how a caliper works.
But that's why I get angry, because you can't tell me it'd be impossible to do.
No, of course not. Absolutely.
Because you'd had eight years to figure out how to fit a 30 mil front tire on a 25 internal rim with a rim brake caliper and a brake track. I'm sure they could have figured it out. And that's why I get annoyed, because I know they could figure it out. They just chose not to. And so you could imagine if you had that as it is, but with rim brakes. And it weighed 6.5 kilos.
Yeah. I
think
discs are horrendous. I think I do. There's a part of me that thinks disc brakes are we're in like the middle ground of the main solution. The main solution's coming. It might be a hub-based braking system or something like that. But now that we've got all these things internally based in the frame, why do we need these big spinning rotors of death on the outside? Surely we can't we get some sort of wireless braking technology yeah. in there? I mean, like
magnet. You know the air hub, it's your air hub. Yeah. It's not I call it my air hub. The air hub I'm borrowing off you, which slows you down via magnets,
mm-hmm.
basically passing by each other, and it just adds resistance. Little magnet a magnet sits in the fork, and there's a little one in the wheel, and slows you down.
Yep.
Nice and smooth.
I'm on board.
Yep. And one day it slips and it locks in and you go straight over the handlebars.
All right. So I want to finish up, JC, just by a little chat. I got sent this by a few people, but this is just a moment where I don't have an answer. I don't have a point. This is just a question because I'm out of touch here. All right. So this is the Paranormal Studios Escapism Collection. And I got sent this picture of a person. In their kit. What? What can't I say?
They're just really pale. I mean, what's the problem?
What's going on here? Their marketing campaigns seem to be images of everything except someone riding a bike.
They've just picked a very weird photo for that Instagram, this Instagram story thing we're seeing here. I mean, he's kind of like, he looks very pale and his eyes are sunken in and he looks quite sick and he's kind of staring off. But then in the actual product page, I'm on Men's Escapism Light Bibs, and they've got other photos. He looks like a cyclist. He's quite lean and he's got, like, you can see his quads. He looks more normal there, but I'm not sure what, like, why is that the one you've picked when you've done your ad? You know, someone sat there and set up the ad campaign.
It's not so much the fact that, I don't know, like, cyclists, we're all weird looking people. Like, that's not sort of my point. My point is normally that the images that I seem to be getting sent these days are anything other than images of people riding the bike. Like, it's far more common now for me to be sold a map jersey with the person in the map jersey at a disco or lying on a couch in a, like, not in a cafe or anything, like lying in like a fashion shoot type thing. I don't, obviously that's the route this stuff's all taking.
Maybe it's just a way to stand out because everyone has seen a jersey on someone on a bike. And so you're kind of flicking, yeah, you're on your phone. I was like, Kit, what's he doing lying on a couch or laying in a shopping trolley? I don't, maybe it's just trying to get your attention. I don't know. It is, yeah.
I suppose a lot of these are probably from the brands that you are trying to differentiate, got there in the end, yourself from, okay, we're not a world tour brand. Okay, we're not pressing the marginal gains of an aero base layer. We're trying to find another niche to get into. So I understand it from that perspective. I just kind of find the imagery sometimes a bit strange, especially given I know the people that they're marketing to. But, you know, anyway, neither here
well,
nor
it works because P&S is –
Oh, they're killing it.
They're killing it. Everywhere. So,
all right, thank you for your time this week, JC.
No problems.
We will see you all again next week.
See you then.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.